Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is the UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
That is I, Captain Alejandro of the Open Minds Space Federation. Welcome. Actually, don't worry if you're worried. I was trying to get to Open Minds Radio, but I'm tapped into the Federation. This is actually Open Minds Radio, and I am Alejandro Rojas, and we are your UFO news authority, and we have a great show this evening. It's kind of fun, someone different, and someone I doubt you have heard, except for maybe if you live in the Wisconsin area, because she was on the radio there, and that is Betty Mae Okral. And she is from Wisconsin, this really small rural town in the middle of Wisconsin where there's lots of lakes and lots of hunting and that kind of thing. And they have had these UFO sightings out there. So her and her daughter had a sighting years ago. And since then, they've had several more. She began to document them. She talked to some authorities and did some investigating to try to figure out what was going on. And although he was skeptical, her husband eventually also had a sighting. So very interesting. And she decided to write a book about it. So I thought that was kind of cool that she was bold enough to kind of document this these UFO sightings and then write a book about it. So I thought that was neat of her to do. And I thought it was really neat of her also to tweet how cool Open Minds magazine was. And so I decided, you know what, let's have her on the step show and hear her story. And I'm glad I did, because she's a very pleasant lady, and it's an interesting story, and she'll be talking to us later in the show. So it's a great interview, and hopefully, you know, some of you will buy her book, and I know some of you have your own internet radio show, and she's a great guest, so you should have her on your show as well, and then talk about how cool Open Minds Radio is, because they turned you on to this cool lady. The news. Guess what, people? We at Open Minds cover UFO news on a daily basis, and we stay busy making sure we are in the know so we can share with you everything that's going on. And we have this kooky character named Jason McClelland, who writes on the news every day and also comes to the radio show. And I am happy to say that Jason is here once again to share the news. Hello, Jason.
Hello, my friend.
Hi.
I'm not sure whether or not I should take the kookiness as a compliment.
Oh, definitely. That's cool to be kooky.
As long as you say it is, I'll go with it.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, November 21st, 2011. And Alejandro, Thanksgiving is this week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start off with a story that is fitting for Thanksgiving. During Thanksgiving, all sorts of things get crammed into the refrigerator.
Nah.
So we're going to start off with a story about an alien in the refrigerator.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, yeah. A Russian woman claims she found an extraterrestrial outside her home in Western Russia 2 years ago. And until recently, she kept the ET in her refrigerator. According to The Sun, the woman claims she heard a loud noise outside her home. She rushed outside to find flaming wreckage and crumpled metal from a crashed UFO. The extraterrestrial victim of this crash was allegedly nearby, and her reaction was to wrap the strange creature in plastic and place it in her fridge. Well, the Daily Mail describes this creature is 2 feet long, has an enormous head, large bulbous eyes, and an appearance somewhere between a fish and a humanoid. It also appears to have what looks like string-like arms protruding from its body. This Jabba the Hutt-like appearance is just one element to the story. It has many suspecting a hoax.
Baby Jabba.
The Sun reports, quote, people who have seen pictures of the alien have likened it to Jabba the Hutt from Star Wars and Slimer from the Ghostbusters movie.
Mm, yeah.
Others have claimed this bizarre find is simply a rotting vegetable which looks remarkably otherworldly. Also odd is the fact that the woman waited 2 years to tell anyone about this body in her fridge. She claims that when she found the supposed extraterrestrial, it was wearing a spacesuit. But Alejandro, when she put it in her fridge, it seems to be kind of nude. So, kind of creepy. She must have disrobed this creature before putting it in the fridge. And where's the spacesuit now? Don't know. So, that's kind of weird. And the corpse has also disappeared, creating yet another problem with this story. The Sun states that an Academy of Science in Russia is investigating the case. However, according to information in a video that surfaced on November 5th, two men claiming they were from this Academy of Science confiscated the corpse. And also, according to this video, employees at the Academy of Science were contacted about the extraterrestrial body, but those employees denied knowing anything about it, so they could be covering it up, or nobody from that place took the body. Another element to the story that leads some to suspect a hoax is the involvement of paranormal writer Michael Cohen of the website AllNewsWeb. The Daily Mail reports that the footage was unearthed by Cohen. Cohen is infamous for his repeated support of hoaxes and other cases where there is no supporting evidence but his own. With regard to this story, Cohen stated, quote, "This could be an elaborate hoax. However, the possibility that this might be a genuine alien should not be discounted." Cohen did make one good point, though, stating that in all likelihood, most alien beings would look strange to us. And I agree with him. We don't know what all extraterrestrials would look like. So the fact that we have a strange creature, it's plausible that it could be an extraterrestrial. However, the multiple suspicious elements with the story make it unlikely that this corpse in the photos is a genuine extraterrestrial. But until definite proof surfaces, anything's possible, Alejandro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was curious about this story until I saw the picture. I mean, a lot of people have said it looks like an eggplant, a rotting eggplant. And I think that sounds more accurate than an alien. It just doesn't look like an alien whatsoever to me.
There are a lot of bizarre things with the body. The hand is the worst.
It's kind of this lump.
Yeah.
And then with this stringy thing hanging out.
It's long and kind of wavy. And then it has these four little, like, really awkward fingers sticking off it. And the waviness of the arm looks like a branch. You can see sort of the lines of a branch growth going through it as it waves. Or like an eye of a potato, how it like wiggles around. It's just bizarre looking. And someone pointed out that the eyes of the creature sort of look like the cutouts of watermelon rinds. Mm-hmm. You can see the texture of watermelon around the eyes. So I don't know. It could be this sort of science project mashed together. But the other thing is you've got this body, and it's crammed in this bag. So in the pictures, you only see sort of the head sticking out, and it's one wavy arm sticking out.
But
so,
it's like in a plastic sandwich bag.
It's in a plastic bag, and it's funny to pretend like it's a scientific forensic photo. They've got this ruler next to it to show you the size, but they don't bother taking it out of the bag to do the measuring.
Yeah, this thing that's chucked in the fridge. And I think, to me, another reason why it's not so unusual is that I'm a bachelor. And bachelors are used to having
science experiments in the fridge.
Exactly. So these very old things, lumps, that look very mysterious. Just hanging out.
Take comfort knowing that I also have those in my refrigerator.
Oh, you do.
However, that's probably because I'm the man in the kitchen. So because I control all things in the kitchen, it's also my responsibility to toss things out, and I don't.
Sometimes. This story really reminds me of, though, an early Simpsons where he had this sandwich and they went over years.
My stomach is turning just thinking about that episode.
He had this sub sandwich and he kept finding it behind the couch, behind the fridge and everything, and it turned more purple and lumpy, but he would take a few bites every time he found it and then lose it again. I think that's what this was, and probably her husband saw it and was like, oh, there's my sandwich, just like Homer Simpson.
She would throw it in the garbage, and he'd put it right back in the fridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Awful. Well, yeah, I'm calling bogus on that one. I don't know. Yeah. That one's pretty goofy.
A lot of media outlets had a lot of fun with it, too. And that's
they really did. Yeah, it was picked up by everybody. So. Yet another mysterious body in Russia. It seems to be a trend this year and last year. Well, I guess for a while now, it seems to be a lot of silly stuff coming out of Russia. People have time on their hands, and unfortunately, the media picked up on it. So.
Yeah.
Well, I'll briefly do some NASA news here. There was some cool NASA news. NASA announced last week that evidence suggests a giant lake of liquid water could be on Jupiter's moon Europa. A team of scientists led by Brittany Schmidt of the University of Texas at Austin made the announcement at a NASA press conference. The team recently studied ice formations in Antarctica and Iceland, which, as Space.com explains, provided clues as to how strange formations on Europa, known as chaos terrains, were formed. The study provided researchers with evidence that suggests a lake with, quote, as much water as North America's Great Lakes combined is 1.5 miles beneath Europa's surface. And because there are so many chaos terrains on Europa, scientists say several liquid lakes are likely to exist beneath the moon's surface. Liquid water is essential for life as we understand it on Earth, and therefore anytime liquid water is discovered elsewhere in the galaxy, the possibility of finding extraterrestrial life, as we know it, increases. The team's research was published in the November 17th issue of the journal Nature.
Cool.
More water in space, Alejandro.
Yeah, water in space.
And I think this is sort of a big key we're going to have going forward, looking for extraterrestrial life. You know, we're so limited in what we search for now, looking for life as we know it. And a big part of that is water, but we're also just looking at the surface of these bodies. And I think there's so much more going on underground than we realize. I think that's the case on the moon, too. I've said that before.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they send a rover, like the one they launched today.
Right. I think there's a lot going on underground on our planet that we don't know about.
There, perhaps, I think many people would agree with you.
And I think our friends at Virgin are going to find out about that.
Underground?
Under the ocean. I think they'll be able to access things
under the sea?
Under our surface that we don't know about.
Huh.
I do. They're really pushing their Virgin Galactic and their, what is the other one? Virgin
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea?
Under the Sea.
I'm sorry, Richard. I don't remember what it's called.
So I remember that. So they're doing what you're referring to is a project where they're taking a submarine really low. Is that what it is?
Yeah. They have these special submarines, and they're sort of like underwater jets.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So they can go super deep and super fast.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Very interesting. I love under the sea, and you know, I love space. But,
yeah.
You know, when we look at our own planet, we know so little about our own planet. Let alone space, and that makes it even more laughable when scientists make these outrageous claims about even planets in our own solar system, and then they come out and go, oh, by the way, we found planets that don't have orbits. They're just zipping by. We don't know what they are.
Yeah.
We're just guessing. Well, anyway, I've got another great story for you, Alejandro.
Sweet.
Are you ready?
No.
This is an Indiana Jones story.
Nice.
But it's not about Indiana Jones.
Bummer.
Yeah. Well, mummified remains of a body with a large head were discovered in Peru, and some scientists are claiming it to be of extraterrestrial origin. News site IO9 reports that Renato Davila Riquelme, an anthropologist at the Privado Ritos Andinos Museum in Cusco, Peru, made a discovery. The 20-inch-tall body was originally thought to be that of a child, but Spanish and Russian doctors reportedly believe differently. As IO9 reports, Renato Davila Riquelme explained, quote, it has a non-human appearance because the head is triangular and big, not the same size as the body. At first, we believed it to be a child's body until Spanish and Russian doctors came and confirmed that, yes, it is an extraterrestrial being. And that's the exact quote that this guy gave. So,
yeah. Didn't they even say that the head is about the same size or bigger than the body?
It said it's about the same size or bigger than the body. That is correct. And so they thought, those facts alone, they thought it could be a kid with some deformity or something.
Mm-hmm.
But other indicators were teeth. They have this thing has fully developed teeth, really large canine teeth, and it actually has molars. So a child of that age would not have molars.
Maybe they have the head mixed up with the wrong rest of the mummy.
You never know what happens when you're dealing with mummification.
Yeah.
Things can get screwed up fast.
Yeah. Because that sounds really weird. But regardless of if the head is the right one for the body or whatever, it's an awfully strange head.
It's a strange head for sure.
Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to hear more about this one.
I'm sure it's from your ancestors.
Maybe. Then I would be proud to have this large triangular-headed extraterrestrial being as a relative.
Yeah, I know you. You especially, so I'm assuming your family line. You come from big-headed people.
I don't know. Kind of, I guess.
Kind of.
Not abnormally, though. Our heads are typically much smaller than the rest of our bodies.
Oh, I was thinking about your ego. I'm getting confused.
Oh, you.
Got to get a dig in there.
Cold-blooded.
A dig in there for my friend Alejandro. I have a sighting I want to talk about here. A man by the name of Jason Reeve took pictures of UFOs in the sky above Chantry Court in Hatfield, England. While he was on his bed, he glanced out his window and noticed an odd light in the sky. Reeve is a photographer, and he stated, quote, "I often photograph the night sky, and I knew it looked different from anything I had seen before." He set up his Canon 60D and took a series of photos. When he reviewed his shots, he could see four separate lights in the sky that weren't visible when he snapped the photos. According to the well-known Hatfield Times, the image, quote, "showed mysterious mushroom-shaped craft set against a starry night sky." They're kind of interesting photos, and this is a guy who, he's a photographer, but not only is he a photographer, he specifically says that he frequently photographs the night sky. So that takes some specialized practice in itself.
Yeah, that's hard.
But from what I understood from this story, the way he set up his camera, he set it up with, you know, a long exposure, which you typically do for night photography to let more light in, to be able to capture lights in a dark environment. And by doing this, he captured these four different lights, and they're not really streaking or moving like you would expect if, you know, an airplane had come into the field or you know, another light had appeared from a moving object and moved back. You would see these streaky lines, and there really isn't that. There's a little bit of something that could indicate a little bit of movement, but
mm-hmm.
not to indicate where the object came from or where they went. And he didn't see these when he was shooting, so it's interesting.
Yeah, I think they're really interesting pictures. And it's neat, you know, I love to see that from England. I mean, they really pay a lot of attention to UFO sightings. I mean, you still see, even after, you know, no matter what, on a regular basis, weekly basis, we see stories where they take these UFO sightings seriously and report them.
That's something we don't have that often here, unfortunately.
Well, we have it here, but we're a much bigger country with much more news outlets, but they seem to have just as many stories as we do.
Right.
And I mean, you know, Brenton, no offense, guys, it's just compared to America, you know, it's fairly small.
We got a pretty big country here.
Yeah.
Kind of large.
Well, they got a great country. I love it. I don't want people to get mad at me for making fun of Brenton.
Well, you better not make fun of them.
Why not?
They're my friends. I hope they're your friends.
I love those guys.
All right. And thanks to your recent studies, Arizona's our number one state for UFOs in this country.
Yeah.
We've got a lot going on, but again, the reports are infrequent.
Yeah, very infrequent. And who knows what the heck's going on.
In fact, our colleague Maureen had a UFO sighting this weekend.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she did.
It was only a UFO momentarily. It's an IFO now. It's identified.
She had a UFO sighting. She has since identified because of her wonderful research. However, she's found flaws with that identification as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to share the story.
Well, I don't want to steal Maureen's thunder, but she did see something zooming through the sky, making strange movements. It didn't look like an airplane. Certainly didn't look like Chinese lanterns because the thing is moving back and forth and illuminating, and then the light was going out and then coming back. So there were four lights in the sky, and she suspected that they could be, as we've seen recently in the news, skydivers with flares attached to their body going down through the sky. And so she did her research and found out that there was indeed a team of divers who did a dive on that night. However, the time that their dive was scheduled for was an hour after she had seen these lights in the sky. So they could have jumped the gun and gone an hour earlier.
Or practiced.
Or practiced and then gone again.
Yeah.
Used up all their flares.
Well, they got a lot of flares.
But there are a lot of those lights now, and more times than not, they do turn out to be these skydivers.
Yeah, that's interesting that that's become so common. And out here when it's so warm, that could be happening any time of the year.
Well, and as we're seeing with, you know, technology, I mean, everybody can get LED lights now. We're seeing that a lot more. People love being able to illuminate the night sky. So they're putting lights on everything. They go out with their kites and put LED lights on them, their remote control airplanes and put LED lights on them.
Now these guys are putting flares down their pants and jumping out of airplanes.
They're going to catch on fire.
Yeah, they're crazy.
That's pretty dangerous. One more story, Alejandro. A couple weeks ago, and I'm sure everyone remembers this, the White House responded to the disclosure petition that sought formal acknowledgement from the president of, quote, an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group announced his follow-up petition that will be submitted to the We the People section of the White House website on December 1st. This petition reads, quote, we petition the Obama administration to demand a full congressional investigation of UFO ET disclosure efforts by the Clinton OSTP, the Rockefeller Initiative. The information on the PRG website about this new petition explains, quote, in response to the disclosure petition, the OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, stated, the U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race. If true, what was the OSTP investigating from March 1993 to October 1996 in concert with billionaire and Clinton friend Lawrence Rockefeller? The petition goes live on December 1st and will need to gain 25,000 signatures by December 31st, in order to receive a response from the White House. I think that's a tall order, but good luck to Mr. Bassett and his efforts. I wonder if the White House will even bother responding to this or whether they'll be kind of annoyed because they just responded to this.
Well, and this one's a little different. I think the wording is a little confusing, and he is asking the White House to ask the Congress to investigate the White House.
Right.
Which is kind of strange. And not only that, as far as the documents go during the Clinton administration, Clinton asked William Hubble, his buddy, to look into UFOs. But there's no – and he has stated that he looked into Roswell but didn't find anything. And, of course, we have during his tenure the Roswell reports that came out of the Air Force. But there we don't see the Office of Science and Technology involved with that during
right.
the Clinton years. The there was a consultant who worked with Rockefeller because Rockefeller was interested in it, Hillary Clinton – was also there were Rockefeller's correspondence was going through her office, but that's all it was. And you see no real conversations between them going on that, you know, that the Clintons were actively helping Rockefeller. It seemed like Rockefeller wanted them to be, but they didn't really respond much mm-hmm. or officially get any investigation going on. So I don't. You know, you're asking the White House to investigate itself and then a Democratic president to investigate the Office of the Science and Technology, which obviously is not interested in the subject, to investigate the Clinton office. It's a really tall order, and I think what even if he gets to 25,000 signatures, like you said, that's a tough one.
Well, and you make a really good point, pointing out that you're asking the White House to ask Congress to investigate the White House.
Yeah.
You know, that seems sort of combative, like the first one was, basically saying, admit to us that you're lying. You're all liars. I mean, you can't go and attack them and expect them to really have any sort of motivation, any desire to tell you something if they know something.
Yeah, I think what would have been interesting, Antonio and I were just talking about this, because Antonio wrote the Rockefeller document.
Right.
He was on staff, and Antonio and I were talking, it would have been interesting if you worded it in the way, because the Office of Science and Technology said they had no evidence, if you were to worded it that we would like the Office of Science and Technology to respond to the Rockefeller document. And because there is some great evidence in there. There's some great cases in there.
That's
and
simple.
That
it's straightforward. The wording is so much better.
Yeah. Because it's like, okay, you say you can't find any evidence. Well, what do you think of this document?
Right.
Because there's some great evidence in there.
Right.
That would have been good. I mean, that would have been something I think the entire UFO research community would have been behind, because it would be interesting to see what the White House says.
Yeah. And, again, Antonio made a good point, too. I mean, it's the timing is bad, too. I mean, look at everything that's going on in our country right now. I really don't think there's going to be a congressional hearing about something like this. So.
Obama's already asking them to create jobs, and you know they're obviously not excited to do anything Obama is asking them to do,
right.
Let alone look for extraterrestrials,
right?
To investigate,
right.
This thing.
Well, we'll watch through the month of December and see how it unfolds.
Yeah.
Well, Hunter, that is it for the news. Remember to check out all these stories and so many more at OpenMinds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you have been briefed. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Back to you, Alejandro.
Thank you, Jason. All right. Before we get into the interview, I want to tell you about another couple of stories that you can read that we've written. And lately, Antonio and I have tackled England, speaking of Britain earlier. And that is a story that actually I wrote for the Huffington Post, although it was written by another group, had written about Prince Philip having a new biography out. And it's not an autobiography, but it's a gentleman who wrote about Prince Philip. And Prince Philip is the Duke of Edinburgh and the husband of Queen Elizabeth. And he had actually a very interesting upbringing. And he was a dashing fellow in the Navy who the Queen fell in love with as the princess before she was Queen. And so this guy decided to write a biography about the prince. What's interesting is that he was actually inspired by Prince Philip's UFO interest, and that's what I wrote about on the Huffington Post, that he was going to write a book about ufologists after World War II, and Prince Philip was one of those people, because Prince Philip has been into UFOs for some time. But because he got into Prince Philip's story, he thought it was so interesting that this deserved a book itself, just Prince Philip's early life, which it does. It is very interesting. I went on to talk about something that Antonio has written about on Open Minds before, about how Prince Philip's uncle, Lord Mountbatten, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying that correctly, but he had also been into UFOs. This was a lord, a well-to-do gentleman, and he actually had one of his employees saw a UFO on his one of his estates, and he investigated that, but he had some ideas about UFOs. So very interesting story. Now, Antonio then went on to write on OpenMinds.tv about the 1979 UFO debate at the House of Lords, and you can really read the verbiage from the entire debate, and this is really interesting because the House of Lords, which is kind of weird. We don't have something like that. You know, here the Queen can declare someone a lord and they're an important person, and they have their own branch, kind of like the House of Representatives or something, where the lords get together and they're a branch of the government. And so there was a debate there about UFOs in 1979, and Antonio put a story on Open Minds TV about that and some official documents that came from that debate. So very, very interesting stories. You'll have to check those out. As for now, let's go ahead and get to our interview with Betty Mae O'Krull. I'm very happy to have gotten her, and this is a great I'm glad to have her on. All right. I am excited to have on the show author of The Mysterious Lindsay Lights, Betty Mae O'Krull. I tried to do your name again. Did I get it better this time? Or is it like kind of O'Krull?
Yeah, it just kind of rolls. O'Krull.
Okay,
yeah.
I And what did you say the origins of your name was?
Yugoslavian.
Okay. Yeah, very interesting. It's a neat name. So, so Betty, you've written this book about these UFO encounters, and it's really interesting to me, that the sightings that you were having, which actually I hadn't heard of in Lindsay, Wisconsin, were so impressive to you that you decided to write a book.
Exactly. I never realized you would be able to see UFOs in Lindsay, Wisconsin. I didn't think you lived in an area where such things would happen. So I was really surprised by it. Yeah,
well, and, you know, I've written recently about UFO hotspots, and I do these graphs and stuff, and they happen all over the country. And that kind of brings me to one of my first questions, which is, when this started happening, first, when did these UFO sightings start, and what did you think of the whole UFO phenomena when this all began? I mean, were you sort of an enthusiast, or did you just really not think much of the subject?
Well, I didn't think about UFOs. I never had a reason to. But in mid-October of 2004, my daughter and I were coming home from Marshfield, is a town about 15 miles from our home. And it was nighttime, and the first sighting appeared at that time in the sky. It was a V formation of about, I'd say, anywhere from 9-10 white lights. And it just hovered there above the road, and it wasn't too far in front of us, probably a half mile. And as we watched this, it just started shutting the lights off one at a time from the bottom row and then up the top row, and it was just gone. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, what was that? Because any aircraft around here, I never noticed anything like that. And so the sightings just continued, and this was in mid-October of 2004, and my daughter was with me. She was 11 at the time, and we'd seen this together. So the next day, I thought I'll just go to the library and find some books about UFOs and see if we can find a picture of what it was we saw that night. And, of course, we did find a picture of what looked like a V-formation, somewhat of what we saw. And right there, I was kind of convinced that it was something out of the ordinary. So we just continued to watch for them, and at times they would just catch us by surprise. We had no idea it was going to happen, and then all of a sudden there's these lights turning on. And so I just documented what we saw and kept track of it real close on the calendar, and decided I was going to write about it because there were so many sightings. But prior to that, you know, I was just a common person. I never delved into UFOs. I watched movies in my later teen years about UFOs and maybe some documentaries on UFOs, but I never seen any of my own.
Now, this first sighting that you had, could you estimate how far above the road you think those lights were?
Well, according to the tree line on the side of the road, they were just above the tree line and right in the center of the road.
Wow.
So just in front of us and between the tree line. And I don't know where it came from because just suddenly I see this sitting in the sky. I mean, I didn't see it turn on. I just noticed it there. And when I asked my daughter, would you look at this and see if you can tell, because I wasn't sure if there was a hill with, say, maybe something like a trailer with reflector lights sitting there, and my car lights are hitting their lights, the reflectors, and, you know, and then I see this V formation, and she said, no, it was in the sky, definitely in the sky. And, of course, as we got a little closer, it was definitely in the sky, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just started shutting off one at a time, and that was really, really weird.
Wow. Since you can kind of estimate that it was just above the tree line, what were your estimates for the possible size of this formation?
I would say bigger than a school bus would be, you know, and it's hard to recollect because it happened so fast, and at the time you're not thinking to take down that type of information.
So, but
when I did decide that I was going to keep track of this, because after a couple of sightings occurred after that, I thought, well, okay, this is more than just once.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep track of it and see what really occurs.
That's great that you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I documented everything in the book. And like I said, I have the time and date of a dozen sightings. I drew illustrations of what we saw because we could never get pictures. So that helps the reader, you know, see what it is that is being described.
Right. So these red lights, I think that you said that they were red, and I'm kind of guessing because that looks like on the book cover, you know, you kind of have an illustration of a V formation of these red lights. Were they very bright?
Well, okay, the V formation on the cover, they were white lights.
Okay.
We've seen white lights, like in the V formation. We've seen rows of yellow white. We've seen rows of all orange and rows of all red. And
oh, wow.
We've seen several different things. They weren't all the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've seen an object that looked like a full moon. And we've seen another sighting that it appeared to be stars, a group of stars. And then a short time later, when I checked for these stars, they were nowhere in sight.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, you know, you just try to make sense of it. Your mind tries to make sense of what it is that you're viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us in the family seen these things. It wasn't just one of us. It was the three of us most of the time. And my daughter and I together seen all of them except for the one sighting of the red lights. I was by myself when I saw this row of red lights. And a lot of these sightings were viewed right from our house.
Wow. So your daughter, how old was she when this first sighting occurred? And what did she think?
She was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was from watching E.T. or whatnot. her response to it at first, she was a little scared, I think. But then I told her, I said, you know, this is just a once-in-a-lifetime thing. You know, we're going to do anything like it again. I said, but I do think that was a UFO. And, well, lo and behold, we've seen a dozen sightings. And as time went on, Amanda was really interested in watching for these, and we made it a point to gather up our stuff and back the car out of the driveway and sit on our dead-end road across my driveway just about every night and watch for UFOs. And she was very into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, she must have kind of talked to her friends about this. How did they react? Did they start to come hang out with you, or did she not talk to her friends about it?
Yeah, she didn't want to say too much. Some of her friends probably at that time were maybe too scared because we live in the country, and when she did have her friends over, she didn't want to scare them. We told a few people, but then, you know, you don't want to say a whole lot. You know, people are going to think you're a little kooky.
Right.
But now the book is out with her picture on the back with us, so, you know, there's no going back now. So.
Yeah. Well, and now she's, what, around 17 or 18?
Yeah, she's 18 now. Well, okay.
Yeah. So you can be a little more brave. That's when you start to be a little more brave, I guess, huh?
Exactly.
So, right after this first sighting, you said that you started to see it more often. About what was the frequency?
There really was no set pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It could happen a couple of weeks from each other, or a month, 2 months. At one point, I think a good 4 or 5 months had gone by before we seen anything. You just never knew.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we started watching for them too, because we just wanted to figure out what they were.
Right.
And we came up with no answer. There was no sound. Most of the time, they were stationary. A lot of times, these rows of lights, they were similar in the fact that they would light up one light at a time and hover there and then shut off in the opposite direction. And then maybe light up again, maybe say at an angle. And these lights were all about the same size. I would guess them to be somewhere around the size of a stop and go light.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, as you're coming, approaching a stop and go light, how big a stop and go light would be.
Yeah.
And there was no glare. It was like they were contained in the circle. And like I said, they were either all yellow, white, orange, or red. It was never mixed colors.
Oh, really? Never mixed colors, all one color.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I observed flares being shot off from the jets. The jets fly over here. This is open airspace. I called Fort McCoy, south of us here, because they didn't move very around here, and I knew that. But I wanted to know what it looked like, you know, so that I wouldn't mistake their maneuvers for what we were seeing. And it's not flares. Because they were shooting flares off just this week, and I watched them. And it kind of resembles maybe what we saw, but not.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. So it's still unidentified.
Have you seen these things moving?
No.
They just kind of turn on and turn off?
Yes, stationary, at treetop level.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
no noise.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So then you, what about you? You had, obviously you were curious about them. Did you begin investigating kind of on your own, or did you start by inquiring with neighbors or people in the area?
Well, right away I went to the library. At the time we didn't have a home computer, and I got all the documentation I could of any UFO book that was possibly out there. I went to the video store, got documentaries to watch, just to compare what it was people were reporting and what it was we were seeing. And there was a strong resemblance to what other people were saying that they saw and what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was starting to think more and more that, Is this really what you call UFOs? And I didn't talk too much to the neighbors until my husband went to work and was talking to the guys about these lights that we had been seeing. And there was a few people that did come forward that lived in our area here that said that they had seen a few things too that they couldn't explain.
Mm-hmm.
So that opened it up a little more for me to actually talk to them and ask them, what is it you saw? And some people claim to have actually seen a saucer, daytime craft.
Wow.
In this area. Yeah, and much more impressive than what we were seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, no kidding. You know, I had no idea that UFOs would be spotted in Lindsay, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yep. What about your husband then? How did he react when you went and told him what you and your daughter had seen?
Yeah, the first night when we seen the V formation, as we came home and approached our driveway, there was another sighting right on the horizon west of us that was very strange. It was like a bouncing ball, a flaming ball. I mean, this thing looked like it was on fire, actually burning. And
wow.
It was bouncing. This thing was bouncing across the horizon. And it bounced a little to the right, and it bounced a little to the left. Then all of a sudden, it just sat there.
Wow.
And then, this light shot up straight out of the center of it, and we're watching this thing shoot up into the sky. It was just a small light at the size of a star. And then it just traveled straight left, and it stopped, and it traveled straight right, and then straight left. And it was like, okay. And that was the very same night between the B formation. So then when my husband came home from work, we told him right away, we just saw this in the sky. And, you know, he'd be quiet person anyway, but he didn't say a whole lot. And we've seen a few things after that, my daughter died. And we told him again, and he didn't say a whole lot until we ended up having his own sighting along with us. And he just kind of turned and looked at me and was a little white in the face and said, I just got these things. And I said, yeah. I said, exactly. Exactly. So then, since that point, he did pay attention to what we were talking about, and he noticed things too. If we see something, we call him out to take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. How long after your sighting was his first sighting?
We've seen our first sighting in October, and it was the following June.
Okay, so a few months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd say Amanda and I had probably 3 or 4 sightings before June seen the one that he seen with us. We all 3 seen it at the same time, yeah.
So you're probably relieved that he finally had his own sighting and that it was becoming more of a family affair as opposed to just kind of...
Right. Oh, yeah. You know, then you got some backup. Then you feel like, you know, they're rooting for you, not looking at you like, okay.
Right. Exactly. So what about any local authorities? Did you approach anybody?
Well, at one point, I was getting kind of nervous because these sightings were right by our house. And I didn't know what they wanted. And because I read all these UFO books at the time this was happening, I was starting to get just a little nervous about what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I thought I noticed a light in the sky that looked like it was strobing. And it was strobing with light blue. And I was just a little nervous. And as we watched this thing, Amanda and I, her dad was at work, I asked her, I said, what do you think we should do? I said, I don't know what that is. And so I did call our local police department. And I'll be darned if they didn't send the sheriff out here. And she took a look at it through the binoculars and said, that's a star. And I said, that's a star? I said, it's strobing, red, white, and blue. And I don't know if they have satellites up there that do this, but I noticed these things in the sky even now, a few of them that are located in strategic places that seem to have this strobe effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a star. I think it could at least be a satellite. But she says to me, we can't do anything about it unless it's treetop level. And I'm thinking, really?
Well, that's an interesting response.
I know.
That's very strange because it's like, okay, I can see maybe if it's at treetop level. But it, you know, leads me to wonder, and this has happened, some police have had their own sightings and sometimes of things that are at treetop level. I wonder if they have any stories around there in their police department of things like that happening.
Right, because the response was as though... If it was treetop level, they could do something about it, but since it was way out there, there was nothing they were going to do about it. And it did kind of strike me as kind of funny when she said that. But I was like, oh boy, you know, I called her out here and it was nothing more than a star.
Yeah.
You know, but after that, we just made sure that what we were looking at wasn't anything that was just, you know, identifiable.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I never called anyone after that. I just thought there's nothing they're going to do about it, and I'll just keep track of it.
Mm-hmm. So out of all the sightings that you had, was the first one the most spectacular, or was there another one or others?
They were all extraordinary, really. I can't really pinpoint any that was better than others. I do know, though, that the one account that I have in the book of the red lights scared the heck out of me. I was on the road myself coming home, and these lights lit up beside me right alongside our house here.
Wow.
Or across from our house, I should say. And, it scared me.
So those must have been pretty low.
They were just above the treetops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was big. I estimated it to be about as big as a barn.
Mm-hmm.
One slice. Yeah.
One light or all together?
There were about six lights
that
lit up one at a time. And like I said, all these lights seem to act the same. They just light up one at a time and hover there. And then short time after that, they'll just start turning off in the opposite direction. So very intriguing, really.
Mm-hmm.
Scary, but intriguing.
What are the people like in your town? About how big is it? Is it very far from a big town?
Well, I really can't tell you how big Marshfield is. I really can't recall what the population is of Marshfield. But Lindsay is about 17 miles southwest of the city of Marshfield, and it's just a community. It just has a local bar, a small general store, a park, and just some little neighbors, you know, and we're 3 miles south of this little community. And we're just country people. You know, a lot of us live in the woods. This is a big hunting area, a lot of wildlife. And we're just, you know, mind our own business and, and we just, you know, say hi to the neighbor when we see them and whatnot. And when I wrote this book, I didn't know what kind of response I was going to get from the community. But the local tavern had the book signing down there. She advertises it on the radio. And they were open to it. A lot of people around here already have read the book and thought it was well written.
Oh, great.
And I haven't had really any negative responses. I guess any negative responses, they're probably keeping it to themselves, maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, and that's interesting that, I mean, since when the book came out, were you shocked by the positive response?
Not shocked, but...
Or pleasantly surprised.
I was hoping the book was going to do good.
Uh-huh.
I was hoping people were going to be receptive to it, and they were. And I'm just glad. I really am. Like I said, people are just pretty much open-minded around here.
Cool.
And, so I don't know. We'll see how much publicity I did here. In the coming 2 years, I have the contract with my publisher, so it's just getting going.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you had anybody, you know, very many people that have kind of maybe not talked to you anymore or treat you strangely at all?
No.
That's good.
No.
Yeah, that's great. I think that, you know, and we'll see what you think from your experience, that people are more open about this stuff. They may, or at least open-minded. They may not talk about it much. They may be shy or hesitant to talk about it. But once they feel comfortable to talk about it or with someone who they're comfortable with, that it's always surprising to me how many people are at least open to the idea.
Well, you know, that's why I wrote the book, I guess. I wanted people to come forward if they did see something.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want it to have to go door to door and say, did you see lights in the sky? You know, I thought if I put it in the book, documented it, had the illustrations in there, people would be able to see what we saw from the illustration and say, I seen that, and come forward. And they did at the book signing at the Lindsay Bar and Grill. I did have a couple people come forward and tell me what they saw, not too far from where we live here, a mile, 2 miles away from our house, these people came forward.
Wow.
With stuff that they saw. And they were, you know, kind of freaked out by it. And I guess also someone else that had read the book told me, you know, other people seen stuff, you know, but you're the one that had the guts to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm just like, yeah. I said, but we've seen enough stuff, you know, a dozen sightings within a 4-year period. I mean, it's like, why? You know, I was looking for the answers to all this. You know, why? Well, we've seen these things.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll never know.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part. I mean, you know, there are, and I don't know what you found when you started to look into this subject. There seem to be a lot, some people who feel they've discovered, and it's usually not discovering a couple answers. It's either they feel they've discovered all the answers or none of the answers. And some of the people who I respect who have been in this field the longest, you know, kind of feel like the more they find, the more questions they have. So they really haven't, you know, this phenomena is so enigmatic, it's difficult to understand the mechanisms or the motives behind it.
Right.
Did you feel that way? Did you feel like as you started to research, you came any closer to an answer?
No, actually, I was digging up more information than what I could even process. And it was like, where will this end?
Yeah.
Is there an end? You know, it's like even to this day, you know, there's just so much talk and whatnot, so much written on this topic and whatever. It's there's no end to it. And I'm just a little phase of that. My book and I, you know, it's just a little phase of what's really out there. And I'm just glad to get it out in my community. Because I think, you know, people weren't really aware. Like, I wasn't aware. Well, if you're not really into it and have been into it, you go about your daily life and don't think about UFOs and until you see something. And the more I read about the topic and the more I discovered that people felt the same way. When you see these lights, you seek out the answer for it. You want to know what you're seeing. So then you go and dig into all the information you can find about it, and you still don't get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Other than it's unidentified. And I haven't seen any aliens. I don't think there was any missing time. But then again, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we did see lights, and they were unidentified, and there's still talk now, even this very week, of there being some sightings here in the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so I have a feeling I'm going to be wanting to maybe be checking the sky here a little more often again.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you heard of the MUFON group, the Mutual UFO Network?
Yeah, actually, I had them come out to do an investigation or an interview. I think it was in 2006. And because, like I said, I was getting a little on edge about why these lights were right by our house. And I don't know. Nothing developed from it. And that's when I decided, too, I'm going to just write my own book about it. It's the only way to get this out there. And, I don't know. I didn't know where to go. This was all new to me. And a friend of mine mentioned MUFON. And so that's how I got in touch with MUFON was through her. And, like I said, they never really come to a conclusion either.
Yeah.
So,
it's hard. You know, I've been a MUFON investigator, and, you know, these sightings happen, and you have these people kind of sometimes wanting information or some kind of, maybe even some kind of closure around what's happening to them or what they've seen. And as a MUFON investigator, all you can do is say, yep, that's weird. And,
right.
And you know, unfortunately, they're regular guys like you and me who are just, instead of writing books, you know, going out and doing these investigations. But that's what's interesting about what you chose to do, and I think really neat that you chose to write a book. And, I mean, have you written other books? Have you written columns, or were you in journalism at all?
No, and actually this just came upon me out of the blue. Well, when I was younger, I thought, well, yeah, I'll write some poetry or this or that, you know. Well, that never developed into anything, and I never tried writing a book before, but I thought, you know, I'm just going to write down what happened, you know, write down our dialogue, what we said, how we felt, the story behind the sighting, and just go from there and put it in the book and see what happens. And I was really glad to hear that people said it was well written, and that gives me the encouragement that if I would ever have the reason to write another book, mm-hmm. even a follow-up to The Mysterious Things He Writes, I have the encouragement maybe to do it because this one did turn out well. So I'm just really pleased. You know, I never, like I said, I was never a published writer before. So this is all new to me, and I'm happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, did you ever imagine that, you know, you would write a book about UFOs?
No, like I said, maybe poetry.
Exactly. And that's a little bit of a little bit different than poetry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and it's nonfiction. You know, this really happened to us, and none of it is made up. I have a chapter also that involves the fact that I developed fibromyalgia. Basically right after these sightings or during these sightings, and it just happened like overnight. And I just had a strong feeling that maybe being in close vicinity of a lot of these sightings possibly could have affected my system.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was fine before that. And then after the sightings started happening, I wasn't fine, and I was going to the doctor for a couple of years with complaints of body pain and nausea, and couldn't sleep, and tingling in my limbs and fingers, and we ran all kinds of tests, and everything was negative. And I basically diagnosed myself, because there wasn't anything left, and they didn't know how to treat me. And I looked it up for myself and went to the doctor and told him the only thing I can figure would be fibromyalgia, because there's nothing else. You know, you're not finding anything else wrong with me. And still, to this day, I'm living with fibromyalgia, and I really don't know
mm-hmm.
why all of a sudden it came about. I decided I should just put that in my book too, a chapter as far as what I went through, going back and forth to the doctor for a couple of years, and because that never ever happened in my life before. I even went and got my medical records, and coincided my visit to the doctor with the sightings of these lights, and it all happened at the same time, and I haven't been going back to the doctor recently at all. And we haven't been seeing any lights recently. So I don't know. You know, it's just a thought, but I felt strong enough about it that I should include it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, yeah, it's just such a strange phenomenon. But I wanted to kind of get back to some of the local reaction, too. You said that the local bar held, or is that what it was, a bar restaurant that held a signing?
The bar, the Lindsay Bar and Grill.
Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. they were excited about the book.
Yeah, I guess because you're in my introduction might help too.
So that helps. Now, do they have their own interest in the subject?
Well, the owner's daughter said that she had seen a light in the sky or two with her dad. It wasn't as impressive as ours, she said, but mm-hmm. she was very open to it. And the owner herself purchased the book and read it and was real open to it and has heard around from other people that said that they've seen stuff too. So, you know, I just so happened to write about it. And they enjoy it, I think, you know. And she continues to sell my books at her establishment. And I think they're getting a kick out of it, really.
Yeah, that's cool. It's neat. And it's because they're open to it. Because, you know, so a lot of times people get excited, you know, they're mentioning the book, and so they want to help promote it and things like that. But once in a while, especially in rural areas, you do find these people that are just like, you know, they almost act like they're offended. They really don't want anything to do with anything like that. And so
mm-hmm.
They really kind of shun it. So it's good that you've had this positive reaction. And you also said the local radio station talks about it?
Yes. The radio station in Millsville, which is 15 miles west of me here, was my hometown. The gentleman that did the interview on WCCN even told me that his mother witnessed some lights when she lived around this area, north of us here, when she was growing up. Something that really stayed with her. And he was very open to the subject. And the gentleman that did the live interview from Marshfield, I don't know what he really thought of it, but, he asked the right questions and made me feel comfortable since it was live. Marshfield, they're pretty open to it, the bigger town. But the little Lindsay community here, like I said, since the book carries the title, Lindsay Lights, you know, I don't know if they think, yay, you know, Lindsay is a little bigger on the map now, you know, just because of the Lindsay Lights. And here we are.
Yeah. Now, out of these people who have come forward from the area and said they've had their own sightings, what are the their sightings similar to yours?
Yeah. The sparkles, I call them sparkles, uh-huh. are little pinpoints of lights that just seem to twinkle in the sky and they stand in place, and it seems like when these lights appear, not long after that, you're going to see these rows of the larger lights turning on and off. And several people have mentioned that they've seen those sparkles, too. And I asked, you think it's military? No, they say it's not military. And I'm like, okay, you know, I just want to confirm that. And I've had one gentleman come forward and say he's seen a saucer.
Oh, wow.
Right across from our house. And we moved in down here on this 10 acres in 97. And he said that was the year he witnessed what he saw was a saucer hovering above the neighbor's field across the road from our house when he came out of the woods. And like I said, I never seen a saucer. I saw lights, it's lights. And for people around the area to say they've seen saucers, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is also very common. But like you said, you know, these lights, V formations of balls of lights are a fairly frequent occurrence as well. Now, did you get the feeling that it was one large object or several small ones in formation?
Well, you know, I'm still looking into it. It's about every day. You know, I try to gather more information. So I can figure out, was it one large ship, possibly, or was it several? And I'm beginning to think that the lights that turn on and off in these roads could be from just one large object, and I don't know if it would be a signal. If there's three lights, and then they shut off, and then four, five, six lights turn on, and then they shut off, you know, is this a signal that's being sent, or something? Because it just seems like there's something more to it. You know, there's more to it than what we are seeing. Whatever they're up to, whoever is running these things, have their own little way about how they communicate. And I'm just thinking that they're sending a signal from there with the number of lights and the color of the lights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with colors being different, I just have a feeling that there's something to that.
Mm-hmm.
That I would like to know more about it.
Yeah. And who do you think, what is your theory as to who these guys are?
You know, I shy away from really saying what they are because I don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, it's a ship with little men in it or this or that. All I know is they were lights, and they were lights that don't resemble anything that I would consider man-made. Because nothing hovers at treetop level and is silent and shuts their lights off in the dark and then, you know, either reappears somewhere else in the sky or don't reappear at all. That doesn't make any sense for our man-made craft. And if you're going to have an airplane hover at treetop level, you're either going to hear something. They can't see the sky at treetop level in the aircraft that I knew of.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a helicopter, you're going to hear something.
Yeah.
And usually you're going to have a flashing light somewhere, and the lights appeared to be big enough where if it was an airplane, it would have to be almost landing for the lights to be the size they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't match the description of an airplane or a hot air balloon or a glider or a flyer. You know, there's nothing that I can match it up with.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's unidentified.
Yeah, so you really don't want to say you
anything
don't know where it comes from, but you just have a feeling it's not ours. It's not man-made.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I don't know where it comes from. I really don't, and I don't want to speculate where it comes from. I was never given a message or told, subliminally where these objects are from or where they're going or what they want. So I don't know. And the only thing I have is my optics to tell me this is what I saw. And good thing my daughter was with me.
Mm-hmm.
Observed the same thing, and then her dad, who also observed it. So, and then my friend that wrote the foreword to my book, One Night Observed, a set of lights by our house here. So, we weren't alone, and I'm happy for that, too.
Mm-hmm. That's
but why
great.
We were.
Oh, go ahead.
Why we were picked to see this. Like I said, it's still a mystery to me, too.
Yeah.
You know, why so many sightings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe one, maybe two, but 1,000 within a 4-year period.
Yeah.
That's why I thought, yeah, this belongs in a book.
Yeah, this people got to read about. Great.
Yeah.
And I think it is, it's wise of you, and I think it's, you know, a rational investigative way to look at it in that, like you said, you know, what you can deduce or what you do feel is that they aren't ours and they demonstrate technology that might not be similar to our technology, but that if it's technology at all, what you're seeing, but that, you know, you don't know what it is. And sometimes people jump to conclusions, and I think it's good to, like you have been doing, put together the pieces and let the pieces, you know, take you in whatever direction they do, as opposed to kind of jumping ahead.
Right. And, you know, I wanted to make sure before I wrote the book that we weren't feeling slaves. And the only thing close to what we saw would have been slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen slaves. And, yeah, like I said, it kind of looks like it, you know, how they light up in a row in a stream. But then slaves fizzle out. And the lights we saw actually turned off,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a light bulb just turning off. And the light was contained. And I've read this and I've heard of this in other UFO material, how other people describe certain things they saw. And that's what we saw. And it has to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, very interesting stuff. I can't believe it, you know, that this was put in my hands to write about. And, wow, you know, when you least expect it.
Yeah. I think to me, it's really interesting to hear, too, about the positive response in that area, because I know what the area is like. My stepfather's from Minnesota, and you're not too far from Minneapolis, from that area. And you know, a lot of hunters, a lot of outdoorsmen. It looks like, you know, you're in an area where there are a lot of lakes and forests, so a lot of outdoor people. And I know typically often those people can be seen, and sometimes I've experienced that they are a little more closed to ideas. But I think that's changing.
Yeah.
Really. And it's changed in Colorado, where I'm from. I've seen people in rural areas becoming more open to this kind of stuff as they see stranger stuff and their friends and family see strange stuff. And do you get that feeling also, you said?
Yeah, I believe that even though we are, you know, out here in the woods and in the rural area, I think sooner or later the word is going to spread and it's going to get to these areas that are more closed in, and people are going to realize that everybody's talking about this. It isn't just one person saying this. Several people say this, and the more they hear it being talked about and possibly maybe even see something on their own, like me, you know, I didn't ever think that I would ever see anything like this. And when I did start seeing it, then I started thinking about it and researching it. And that's what seems to happen. When you see this, you have to know more about it. You have to know what it is you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So you go looking for the answer somewhere. And two, you know, people that if you're not used to hearing about this seeing it or whatnot, you know, you kind of like, oh, you know, this is taboo stuff, and I don't know if I should believe in this. I maybe shouldn't even be hearing it. You know, something bad might happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone has their own opinion and you know, and way of looking at things, and that's kind of what I've learned too. When I took this book out, I thought the people that are going to be receptive to it will be, and the ones that aren't, just aren't. And maybe they're not ready for it, or maybe they'll never be ready for it. But the truth seekers, you know, are out there wanting this information.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hear about it. They want to read about it. They want to know what everybody else is experiencing. So, I just gave it a shot and thought, oh, well.
Yeah, here we go. And I think, you know, that, you know, what you're saying, I personally feel, this stuff is enigmatic. And even though I've been in it for a long time and I've talked to a lot of researchers and done a lot of reading, you know, it's hard for me to put my finger on anything as well. And I've heard that from a lot of the people who were in it from the beginning, even the majority of their lives. And I think that I do kind of get the feeling that maybe that is just it, that it's an extremely slow process of getting us open to the idea that there's something possibly out there, and maybe you know, that just very extremely slowly and in the least traumatic way we become exposed to this idea until finally it's kind of a given, and then it's less traumatic when we find out, you know, officially that something's going on. So that possibly,
right.
I mean, that's my best guess.
Right. You want to, you know, go slow at it, and you don't want it to just hit you in the face all of a sudden. Then people will be more willing to maybe accept these new ideas and possibilities of things, you know, the way things really are out there, with as large as the universe is, really, I don't believe that we can be the only life. You know, I just don't believe that. And where they are and what they're doing, I don't know that either. But maybe someday we'll have even a more impressive sighting in the future.
Right.
And like I said, you know, the people that I'm gathering around this area that are coming forward with things that they saw, there's been plenty of people. When my husband goes running around doing his odd job, he takes some of my books along and talks to people. Oh. And they come forward, and they really do, and it's unbelievable people that see things. And of all ages, and they're coming forward, and he'll come home every once in a while with a story from this person or a story from that person, what they saw. I'm like, really? You know, and I just never even realized that was out there, that many people were seeing things out there.
Right.
And, you know, I just may have a reason to write another book if enough people come forward,
yeah,
and are willing to talk about it. I'd be willing to write about it.
Yeah, that's great. Now, one thing I do want to know is, you definitely put yourself out on a limb by writing this book. You know, you weren't sure how your neighbors or the community were going to take it, and it's sort of a risk, and it's kind of a big risk for someone. Why did you think it was important? Why did you think that you had to do this?
I don't know. It's kind of strange. Like
uh-huh.
I said, I just started writing down in my notebook, you know, by hand, handwritten manuscript. And I told my daughter, you know what, I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to put Lindsay on the map. I said, this is very strange, what's happening, what we're seeing, and I need to get this out there. You know, something needs to be done to open people's eyes up so they watch the sky themselves. And, yeah, I took a risk, you know, but like I said, I'm just an average middle-class citizen. And I guess if people want to think I'm kooky, I'm just another middle-class citizen that's a kook. I mean, you know, I don't hold any high office anywhere, and I'm not going to get fired from a high-paying job because my boss thinks I've lost it. So I thought, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it. So.
Well, I think you're kooky in a cool way.
Well, touché.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say, I don't know, because I feel that way too, actually, which is funny that you say that, because I often contemplate, why do I do this? Why is this so important for me? And it's this compulsion that I can't necessarily explain, and one day maybe I will. But so it's interesting to hear you say, I don't know, because it's definitely a big step.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I want to thank you for being on the show. We're pretty much out of time, and I want to thank you for writing your book. You know what? One more question. Has anybody gotten photographs or video? I know people have been listening the whole time thinking, why isn't he asking this question? Has anybody got photos or video of these lights?
We tried to take snapshots. It's just never developed. You can't get a good photo of these lights in the dark and try camcorders.
Yeah.
That didn't work. So I was just left with making hand-drawn illustrations.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a shame, but, boy, the ones that do get the photos and videos, I got to hand it to them.
Well, good ones are hard to come by, and I know what you're saying. Taking pictures or video of lights in the night sky is very difficult. It's a hard thing to do.
Right. Otherwise, I probably would have had some, you know,
mm-hmm.
but we tried, and it wasn't working, so I thought, well, we're just going to take the actors and keep an eye on it and see if we can identify these things.
Great. Well, you know what? I'll put the link to the book in the Blog Talk Radio description, and we'll put it on the website. And then just so people know, it's called The Mysterious Lindsay Light, and you can go search for it on Amazon. Is there another good place that they should go look for you?
Well, Barnes & Noble has it online. I guess it even reached as far as Booktopia, and that's in
cool.
Sydney, Australia.
Oh, interesting. Great.
But, you know, if anybody really wants to order the book, they could even send me an email, and I'd be willing to send them a signed copy also. And for the people in this area, just stop on down by the Lindsay Bar and Grill, and we'll have a copy for you down there.
Yeah, or head out to the Lindsay Bar and Grill, maybe, for people who want to go do some sky watching themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Just so people know, it's B_OCKERL.mysterious Lindsay Lights. And Lindsay is spelled LINDSEY at rocketmail.com. So B_OCKERL.mysterious Lindsay Lights@rocketmail.com, where they can get a hold of you. And they can also look at Mysterious Lindsay Lights on Facebook, it looks like.
Facebook or online. Yes, I'm on Facebook, and or look up Mysterious Lindsay Lights online, yes.
Great. So if you're in the Wisconsin area and you're having sightings similar, get a hold of Betty and let her know for part two of the Mysterious Lindsay Lights. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Betty, so much for being on the show. It was great to have her on, and it's cool to talk to someone new and someone fresh and get a fresh perspective. And, you know, someone kind of from the general public who and hear what she has to say about, you know, the mystery she witnessed and her thought process as to how she dealt with that. And it's so cool that she documented everything and wrote a book. So go check out her book. Or like she said, if you're at the Lindsay Bar and Grill, I know you can check her out and her buddies and hang out with them and talk some UFOs. That is it for the show. And next week is going to be a lot of fun. We aren't going to take a break just because it's Turkey Day later in the week. We're going to be back and we're going to be full. And actually, Blog Talk Radio is ran by all vegetarians, so we will not be sacrificing a turkey to the Thanksgiving gods. We will be, we'll have a no harm turkey day. But anyway, I hope you enjoy your meals. We're going to, and when you come back, we're going to have Nick Redfern next week. So that'll be a lot of fun. He's written several books on the UFO subject about Men in Black and Roswell and all kinds of stuff. And his latest book is about contactees. And we've talked about the contactees of the 50s before. So it's a subject I love to talk about. I think it's so interesting, and it's kind of a forgotten period of ufology. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about how he got into this field and then also talk about the contactees of the 50s. So don't miss the show next week. Thank you all so much for listening. And don't forget to visit openminds.tv for more UFO news. Talk to you next week, people.